What is love? Welcome back to Thinking It Through here on Good News Community Radio, and we are going to be ending off this week with the conclusion to the Big Word series with Max Jagannathan. Max is the director of Thinking Faith, is also an international speaker, and is currently undertaking a PhD in law. Here's Max with the last big word from the Big Word series, love.
Hello and welcome to the final episode in our Big Word series. Today we deal with the big word, perhaps the biggest word of all, love. What is love? My name's Max Jagannathan, and I'm from Thinking Faith, and it's a pleasure to be with you today. In William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, probably his most famous work, Juliet says to her beloved Romeo, "My bounty is as boundless as the sea, my love as deep. The more I give to thee, the more I have, for both are infinite." I'll just say that again. "My bounty is as boundless as the sea, my love as deep. The more I give to thee, the more I have, for both are infinite." Now, this is a pretty big claim by Juliet. She's declaring her love to Romeo to be infinite, as the sea is deep and boundless. And so she's using the sea, the ocean, as a metaphor, right? She's not the first to do it. Many have done it before and since. The problem is, of course, as we know, that the sea is not infinitely deep or boundless. The sea, the ocean, has a floor. There's an ocean bed at the bottom of the ocean. Now, obviously, it's a metaphor. It's an illustration. I get it. It's not meant to be literalistically true, and all metaphors and analogies break down at some point. But I think it's relevant that when we think of something as infinite, and then we use a metaphor like this, like Juliet does, like Shakespeare tries to use, it tells us something about perhaps how we think about love today, maybe in a subconscious way. Now, everyone has a sense of the importance of love. It doesn't matter if you're a Christian or atheist or whatever worldview you might subscribe to. I don't think there's much argument around the reality that love is the supreme ethic. Love is the most important thing. Love is what we all need more of. And yet, we don't seem to be able to utilize that basic truth to build a better society. It seems that no matter how much we understand the importance of love, we don't seem to be able to do it much better than we have been for many years. And all of the metrics in this context continue to disappoint, whether it's inequality or social exclusion or domestic abuse or domestic violence or racism or sexism or whatever it might be. We don't seem to be able to love very well. We are very good at writing songs and movies and music about it, but we don't seem to be able to do it very well. And we see the importance of love and the prominence of love as a broadly accepted supreme ethic across worldviews and across the world in our arts. Our arts are perhaps the place where you see the importance and the prominence of love most obviously. You know, the Beatles, "All You Need Is Love," the Black Eyed Peas, "Where Is the Love?" Even Taylor Swift, "I Want to Be Defined by What I Love." Love comes up again and again and again. And I think that's because deep down, love is an intrinsic outflow and an intrinsic need of every human heart. Like all of the big words that we have dealt with, truth, faith, hope, and love, love is perhaps our deepest and greatest both need and desire to be able to express to other people. So what then has gone wrong? Well, I think there are two big problems with how we have understood love and how we continue to understand it in the world out there. The first is the dichotomy between desire and sacrifice. And the second is the dichotomy between qualitative and quantitative. Now, I'm going to unpack both of these things for a few minutes. Firstly, desire and sacrifice. Now, obviously, this is a big generalization, but when we look at the world out there, particularly when we look at movies, when we look at romantic comedies, when we look at the great love stories, and even when we look at the great biographies of people who have achieved notable things, there's always an element of love, either love for people or love for the task that they are driven by. But the type of love, as was categorized by the great thinker Mortimer Adler, is a desirous love. It's about desire. We desire the thing that we love. It's most obvious in romantic love, of course, for those of you with spouses or boyfriends or girlfriends or partners, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. It's what most poets are writing about. It's what most singers are singing about. It's the love for other things in the context of desire. We want the thing that we love. We desire the thing that we love. Right? So that's the first thing. Now, that in and of itself is not a problem, but if that is all that love is, then we are going to have a problem. Desire has to be accompanied by something else. And according to the Christian message, love is not anchored in desire. It's anchored in sacrifice. The purest form of love is sacrificial. It's not desirous. Yes, desire is a part of love, but the heart of Christian love is sacrifice, selflessness, giving of the self, the abandoning of the self, rather than the fulfillment of our own desires. How does that work and how does that play out? Well, there are many places in the Bible we could look at, but probably the most obvious and also it happens to be the most helpful place to go is 1 Corinthians 13, which is a letter that is written by Paul, who is one of the first evangelists and Christian theologians and thinkers and an author of a large section of the New Testament of the Christian Bible. And he writes in 1 Corinthians 13, which is a letter to the Corinthian church, he writes this wonderful creed or declaration defining what love is. And he talks about love as being patient, as being kind. And this is the definition of love we see so often at weddings. In fact, it's such a compelling passage by Paul about love that you even see it at the weddings of atheists sometimes. Even non-Christians use this. Love is patient, love is kind, it does not anger, etc., etc., and the list goes on. And it is this beautiful kind of breaking down and unpacking of what love looks like and what love is. And it's a positive thing. But interestingly, it doesn't really fit with that exclusively desirous idea of love that we have. I love that person, I must have them. I love that company, I must work for it. I love that kind of food, I must consume it. I love those clothes, I love that dress, or I love those shoes, I must have them, right? It actually goes far, far beyond the desirous paradigm of love that we see all too often in the world around us. Now, that 1 Corinthians 13 passage, it starts off kind of soft and fluffy and easy. Love is patient, love is kind. There's nothing controversial about that. But the rubber really hits the road towards the end of that passage, where Paul makes some very, very important and incredibly powerful claims about what love is and what it does. He goes on to say, love rejects evil. Love rejoices in truth. And love always preserves and always protects and always endures. These are huge, huge things for him to be writing, especially to our world today, where we are told that unconditional love is unconditionally affirming, that it shouldn't reject anything, that it should just rejoice in whatever people want. Whereas Paul says no. Paul says love rejects evil and rejoices in truth. And so by definition, this vision of love that Paul is putting out there, it goes just beyond desire. It goes beyond simply unconditional affirmation. It's something that is actually looking out for the good of its object, not simply for the satisfaction of its subject. It's saying, if you love someone, you want what's best for them, which might not necessarily be everything they want or everything they feel or everything they do. So we see in Paul's definition of love, unconditional love is not unconditionally affirming. Now, those of you who are parents, this will not come as a surprise to. I have a son and a daughter, and they both love, for example, sweets. Now, the worldly paradigm of unconditional love would suggest that I need to unconditionally affirm all of their desires. Whenever they want sweets, I need to give them sweets. But that's not how love works. True love is about protecting those we love. True love is about bringing about their flourishing. True love is about rejecting evil and threats. And even if it's something that comes from within them that is not good for them, true love is about calling that out. Quite simply, the purest kind of unconditional love cannot be unconditionally affirming. It has to discern. It has to discriminate. It has to bind. Love necessarily needs to be understood in keeping with the flourishing of its object, not simply in the affirming of its object. And this is where the sacrificial aspect of love comes to life in relation to the Christian message specifically. Because when God came into the world and went to a cross, sacrificing himself, sacrificing his son, Jesus Christ, he was showing the purest form of love that has ever been witnessed in human history. And it all happened in and through sacrifice. He came into the world not for his sake. He came into the world for our sake. And Jesus spells it out for us, both before and after his crucifixion. that love is about giving of yourself, about abandoning yourself to a greater purpose, to the good of others. He says, love has no other than this, than to lay down one's life for their friends. That is the model of love. Not a desirous love of just blindly affirming everything in someone that we say we love, or just blindly going after the people and the things that we love for our own personal satisfaction, but to bring about the good of others, to discern lovingly, to discriminate lovingly, to conditionalize how we treat people in and through our unconditional love. And that's where we see that not only is Christian love sacrificial, not primarily desirous, it's also qualitatively different to the love that we understand in the world today, not quantitatively different. When the Black Eyed Peas say, where is the love? When the Beatles say, all you need is love, they are correct, but they are not complete. The mistake that they are making is that they think that the problem out there is that we don't have enough love. Whereas that's not the problem. The problem is that the brand of love that humankind is capable of generating in its own heart is not enough. It's not qualitatively sufficient. It's not that it's a lack of it, it's that it's not the right kind. And so we see straight away that we need to somehow find a way to access and to disseminate a qualitatively different kind of love than we are capable of in our own strength. Because for us as human beings, even when we love, deep, deep down it comes from a selfish place. Even we are trying to love, our interests, our preferences, our political views, our social views, our opinions, they all come as part of the backdrop of that love. Whereas the love that we need, the love that Paul writes about in 1 Corinthians, the love that Jesus showed when he died on the cross, is not just an unconditional love, not just a sacrificial love, but a qualitatively different love to the kind that the world is talking about. The problem is not that we don't have enough love. The problem is that we have not tapped in to the source of a different quality of love. It is a qualitative problem, not a quantitative problem. For those of you who are Avengers fans, you will have seen the movie Thor. When Thor first comes to fight the bad guys on Earth in Avengers, I think it's in his first movie, he's in a big showdown towards the end of the movie, fighting people who are trying to take over the world. And this is humankind's first encounter of Thor. And Thor has a hammer, which is kind of where the way in which he channels his power. And when the human authorities, when the FBI and the CIA and the army and the police force are coming to witness this fight, they don't know who are the good guys and who are the bad guys. And they see Thor using this hammer, and they say through their megaphone, in such a reductive, simplistic, elementary human way, they say, "Excuse me, sir, it seems like you're using unregistered weapons technology. Please stand down. You're using unregistered weapons technology." They simply didn't understand, because they'd never seen anything like it before. This hammer that can seemingly bring down thunder and lightning, they'd just never seen that kind of power. Well, what the Bible offers you and me, what Jesus Christ offers you and me today, is access to unregistered love technology. It is a love technology that cannot be generated in the world. It cannot be created. It can only come from God. God's its only source. But if we step into relationship with him through the person of Jesus Christ, that love is then channeled out into the world. That supernatural love, that sacrificial love, that protecting love, that enduring love, that discerning love, the purest of all, the love that the world needs more of. Billy Graham famously met with President Dwight Eisenhower before one of his crusades in New York. And in the White House, as he was leaving, the president said to Billy Graham, "Billy, I hope the crusade goes well. Wouldn't it be great if we all just learned to love each other again?" And Billy Graham said, "Yes, it would, Mr. President, but we can only love in the purest sense of the word if our hearts are first transformed by the love of Jesus Christ." We are all capable of love, and everyone agrees that love is the most important thing in the world, the supreme ethic. The problem is, it's the wrong kind of love that we are capable of. We need supernatural, sacrificial, God-given love. We need our hearts to first be transformed by the love of Jesus Christ. Otherwise, we are just loving in our own strength. And as we have shown for tens of thousands of years, that's simply not enough. We need our hearts to be transformed by the supernatural, sacrificial, all-powerful, grave-opening, life-changing love of Jesus Christ. Thanks again for listening. God bless you.
And that was the conclusion to the Big Word series with Max Jagannathan. You can check out the Thinking Faith website at thinkingfaith.asia. And also don't forget to check out our website at gncr.org.za. This is Vaughan, aka the Cyber Hitchhiker, wishing you a Christ-filled weekend and a happy new year. Till next year.